For decades now, a number of states out west have been dealing with the closing off of not just private land, but also public land. Wisconsin was really at the forefront of the public land vision as U.S. Senator Gaylord Nelson created the Department of Natural Resources and funded the Outdoor Recreation Acquisition Program, which funded the purchase of 1 million acres of land for parks in Wisconsin. Fast forward more than a half century later, are we at a metaphorical crossroads when it comes to assessing places to roam freely, accessing them in America? We're exploring the question this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Before we do, though, let's check in on the spring membership drive here at WPR.
Thank you, Kate. I'm Cheryl Gasser, along with Keely Voltina, and we are here to ask for your support during our spring membership drive. It is your support that is an essential piece of funding for all the programs you enjoy here on WPR. In fact, listener support is the single largest source of funding. In this drive, it's your time to take action. You make the programs possible when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Last hour, we heard from six donors. Thank you. Thank you for recognizing your connection and your commitment to WPR, and thank you for giving. This hour, we have a goal of 20 pledges.
And these hourly goals are very important because they help us stay on track financially so we can keep the discussion going strong here on the Ideas Network. So give now, make a contribution, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Public radio has a unique funding model. It's a two-way street that creates a higher quality product than you will find anywhere else. This is how it works. You voluntarily contribute, and in turn, you get back programs that are accountable only to you.
It really is an amazing system. You get programs worth listening to precisely because you step up to support them. You make what we do here at WPR possible. We could not do it without you. So make your contribution for independent news, information, and music right now and help pay for all the programs you enjoy on WPR. Make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
WPR is personally important to you, and it's probably also important for you that everyone in the state has access to this high-quality information and sometimes entertainment.
So become a member with a contribution of, say, $10 a month, $120 for the year, and you're not only doing something good for yourself, you're also doing something good for the entire community. WPR, we're listener-supported, and it's your participation that is so very important. So you can be a hero this morning with just a few minutes of your time. Give any amount, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This pledge drive, we're offering a mug featuring beadwork by artist Karen Ann Hoffman.
We Iroquois used our beads in a raised and embossed and embellished fashion. The rock art caribou on this artist mug was inspired by a piece of rock art in southwestern Wisconsin. There has been fine native art on this landscape for millennia. Those ancient artists inspire me to try to do homage to the ideas that they left for all of us here in Wisconsin.
Ask for your 2018 artist mug when you make a gift of $15 a month or more. Here's how.
Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 to make your pledge. I'm Keely Boltina here with Cheryl Gasser. We are asking for your support during this spring membership drive because it's what makes the WPR programs you rely on possible. Your gift of $10 or $20 a month, whatever amount you choose really, is the right amount.
It absolutely is. And we know that you value your time, and we do as well. So giving to Wisconsin Public Radio, it takes just a couple minutes. You tell us your name, contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay.
It's quick and easy to do, and your gift right now really helps. So take the next few minutes to support the station you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Because you value the programming you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio and you want to continue to help it go strong, help us reach our hourly goal of 20 pledges this hour. You make WPR possible when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And just to sweeten the deal, remember that you can support the programs you value and ask for the new WPR Artist Mug when you give $15 a month or more. The mug features a caribou made by Karen Ann Hoffman, inspired by rock art in southwestern Wisconsin. So you can ask for that when you donate at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you've already given, thanks so much. If not, your gift is powerful and makes a real difference. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you.
They paved Paradise, put up a parking lot. With a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swing.
America today, we're largely urban. Lots of parking lots. One of a kind, Joni Mitchell just putting out there for us in her lyrics. They paved paradise and put up a parking lot. 4 out of 5 of us live in urban areas and in suburbia. Fewer and fewer people are growing up with close connections to the land. We're talking about our inability to roam freely, the impact on public lands, and what can be done about it. Ken Ilgunis is an author, journalist, and backcountry ranger in Alaska. Among other things, he's walked thousands of miles across North America. His new book is This Land is Our Land, How We Lost the Right to Roam and How to Take It Back. Ken, welcome to the program.
It's great to be on.
Well, let's start with this notion of the right to roam. What exactly are you talking about? What do you mean by that?
So the right to roam, it's a European thing. It's in countries like Scotland, Sweden, Norway, Finland. And long story short, it's the right of citizens to access not just public land like national parks, but private land as well, meaning you can responsibly hike, camp, bird, paddle your canoe on people's lands. But it's not just a European thing. This was also part of American history from the colonial days up until about the Civil War. We had the right to roam back then.
John Muir, taking his trip thousands of miles to the Gulf and not encountering a no trespassing sign, as you write about in your book. It sounds like the right to roam is more like a solution, but what is the problem? What are you trying to solve here?
Well, you know, a lot of Americans don't have access to nature. You know, on paper, it looks okay. On paper, about 35% of America is publicly owned, which means, you know, we can hike there, camp there. You know, it's our land. The problem is that all of this land is out west in low population states. 40% of this public land is up in Alaska, and, you know, most of us don't have access to that. A lot of it's in Idaho and Nevada, and, you know, that's a long drive. People don't have access to nature from their front door or from a short drive from their home because it's all barricaded by fences and posted with no trespassing signs. So I thought the right to roam might be a solution to some of our nature deficit disorders and physical inactivity problems.
And it's clear that this is a very personal issue to you, as you've done a lot of traveling by foot, by canoe. How can you speak to why this hits so close to home for you?
It just seems to kind of keep following me wherever I go in my life. You know, I grew up in a little suburb in western New York outside of Buffalo, New York. And my family, we were the first to move into the suburbs. So all of the lots next to us were just kind of muddy, woodsy sort of lots. So me and my brother, we had this whole kind of suburban jungle to explore. We were catching tadpoles and skating on ponds. And it was kind of a wild boyhood. But then as we grew up, we watched these lots fill in, and the trees bulldozed, the fields topped with asphalt, and, you know, I kind of saw a hundred years of history of American history in just a few years in my boyhood, and you know, now when I go back to that old neighborhood, the kids, they're not playing in the woods anymore, so they don't have access. But then I moved up to Alaska, and I became a park ranger up there, and I got to roam around the gates of the Arctic National Park, and I learned what roaming, what access to nature can do for a human being. You know, I was walking mountain passes and along riverbeds and, you know, walking with a compass and a topographic map in one hand. And when you go into the wild like that and you return, you feel like a stronger, more empowered human being. And I thought maybe we could kind of bring some of this wildness back with us.
And you write about how our no trespassing culture is a symptom of a deeper sickness that's affecting our nation. How so? How is that?
Oh, boy. I think it's kind of a fight between having our country structured on the common good versus kind of an extreme individual liberty. And, you know, individual liberty sounds like a nice thing, but sometimes it's taken a little bit too far when our laws and policies are not factoring in the common good enough. And I think we're kind of seeing that here. We're seeing it with property rights. And I should clarify that I believe in private property. You know, in these European systems, in the old American systems, private property still existed. People could still own land. They could develop land. They could grow crops. They could own guns. They could pass this land down to their children. The only difference is that there's a responsibility to share it with responsible access takers. And and right now, the rule is that any property owner has the right to exclude, except for, you know, in a handful of cases where there's prescriptive easements or rights of way in the deed. But generally, everyone has the right to exclude, meaning you have the right to post no trespassing signs. And if you own 20,000 acres, say, you can ban 7 billion people from that land. You can ban 7 billion people from those sunsets and from those hills and those grasslands. And I just think there's just something slightly off about that, something slightly unjust about that.
Well, you write about Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg buying up 700 acres of beachfront property in Hawaii and immediately building a 6-foot wall around it. Hawaiians there, they claimed ancestral rights, and they really fought back. So what happened there, and how does this balance work between public and private land? Where is the balance?
that is a particularly appalling case. And that guy, he needs to get like a new public relations worker or something, because some of those decisions, they just don't look good. But yeah, he built this 6-foot wall, which his neighbors called a monstrosity, and it blocked views of the ocean. In Hawaii, it's kind of different. In Hawaii, there is this culture of roaming. For instance, the coasts of Hawaii are some of the most open in America, meaning you can walk the whole coast, all the coasts of Hawaii, perfectly free. We see this in Oregon as well, and we sort of see it in California. Now, when you go to states like Maine or Massachusetts, it's very difficult because private landowners can own all the way down to the mean low tide. And Governor Rick Scott in Florida, he recently passed a law that's making it very difficult for the public to access these beaches as well. But going back to Mark Zuckerberg, I mean, sometimes when you read about land closures, it borders on sociopathic behavior. And I read about these land closures every day. I have a Google alert, so I get to see all this land in America being shut down. And when you look at land ownership inequality in America, it's pretty startling. You know, we know a lot about wealth inequality, movements like the Occupy Wall Street movement, the Bernie Sanders campaign. They kind of raised wealth inequality into the national consciousness, but we don't know anything about land inequality. But just the top 100 landowners, they own 38 million acres, which is the equivalent of 17 Yellowstone National Parks. This is a ton of land owned by 100 people in a country that has 324 million. Ted Turner and John Malone, kind of billionaire media moguls, they own 4.2 million acres between the two of them, which is 2.5 times the size of Delaware. So you have two people owning the size of multiple states. It's crazy. And I just think we should begin to kind of think about these issues more. And I'm not calling for a redistribution of private property. I'm just talking about a more equitable access to private property.
We're exploring a case for rethinking how we handle private property in America. One central point we're considering is whether the whole notion of private property, can it evolve as a concept? And it's not always meant that the way we've been thinking about it today, with no trespassing and private property signs. The book is called This Land Is Our Land. Ken Ilgunis stays with us. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you think we've lost the right to roam in America? Is there a case to be made that more private land should be opened up for public recreation? Call in, tweet us, WPR Mornings. We'll get back to the conversation in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. Wisconsin's own John Muir, the father of the national parks, roamed freely on a grand adventure. His book, A Thousand Mile Walk to the Gulf, never mentions trespassing on people's property. That is noted in Ken Ilgunis's new book, This Land Is Our Land. We're talking about it here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's now take a look at how well our spring membership drive is moving along in Pledge Central.
Thank you so much, Kate. This is the Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Membership Drive, and I'm Keeley Boltina here with Cheryl Gasser. Our goal is to keep bringing you topics like this one, the right to roam and the struggle to draw that line between private and public lands. And it's your support that makes that happen, because listener support is actually the single largest source of funding for Wisconsin Public Radio programs. So give now. Any amount makes a big difference. Go to WPR.org or call 888-2020.
And Keeley, this hour we're looking for 20 pledges. 20 pledges by 9 o'clock in support of The Morning Show and everything you enjoy here on Wisconsin Public Radio. And we've really just scratched the surface, and so we need to hear from you now. Please, if you've already given, thank you so much.
And if you haven't, give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your gift funds the programs you enjoy.
Programs like this one. Here on the Ideas Network, you hear from the person who wrote the bill, who wrote the book, who has unique expertise, and you get a chance to engage with them online and on air. Now, we're glad to seek these people out and get them on the show. In fact, we're privileged. It's a wonderful job, and it's your support that makes this all possible. You can make great radio happen right now with your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You're looking for the best way to make a gift to Wisconsin Public Radio, and that is becoming a sustaining member. As a sustainer, you'll make automatic monthly contributions from your bank account or your credit card.
A lot of people give $15 a month on this plan. Some give $100. The amount, it's completely up to you. And as a sustainer, you're an ongoing member of WPR. You provide reliable funding to the station, to your favorite station. So give now and become a sustainer, or increase your sustaining amount. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We've probably all had this happen. We spend money on something and then hardly ever use it.
I would say closets and closets full of clothes that I never wore.
I bought a pair of backcountry skis a few years ago that I have never used.
I bought an extremely cheap violin case that was so cheap that I threw it away within 10 minutes of opening it.
Unlike some investments, your donation to Wisconsin Public Radio is a good one. One you'll get value from every day. Make your gift to support the programs you count on right now. Here's how.
You can make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Good morning. I'm Cheryl Gasser along with Keely Boltina and with you. And we're so glad to be here raising the money that keeps Wisconsin Public Radio and all the programs that you enjoy, the news, the music, and the conversations on the air going strong. Now, whether your pledge is $5 a month or $500 a month, we appreciate your gift and we count on you.
You love WPR because it's your source for intelligent radio. And there are costs associated with this high-quality radio, and that's where you come in. Your support is so important.
Making a pledge, it's quick, it's easy. You'll be finished in just a couple minutes. And your contribution of any amount, say $10 a month, $20 a month, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes WPR possible.
We have 19 more pledges to go and half an hour to get them. The good news is you don't have to be all 19. You just have to be one. Your gift now at Wisconsin Public Radio. For Wisconsin Public Radio at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is such a critical part of making the programs that you enjoy possible.
And you can support the programs you care about and enjoy your favorite hot or cold beverage in the 2018 WPR Artist Mug. It's yours when you give $15 a month or more. You can take a look at the mug online when you make your pledge, WPR.org, or call 888-202-2552. Thank you so much for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio.
After the Civil War, state legislature started changing the laws governing hunting. Property law was changing to accommodate industry to build factories. This is some of the history we're exploring as we look at the intersection of public and private lands and where we are today. Ken Elgunis's new book is This Land is Our Land, How We Lost the Right to Roam and How to Take It Back. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Are you worried about the future of natural places in America? And how can we strike a balance between the rights of property owners and those wishing to enjoy the land? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Ken, Mark from Spooner emailed and said, the right to roam is totally blocked by current liability laws that have been tested a number of times in our court system, all the way to the Supreme Court. Mark says, if my property is not protected by signage or barriers, if someone is injured on it, I am liable. To change the system would involve an act of Congress and a Supreme Court decision. If not for the broken legal system, Mark says, most people would have no problem with allowing recreational use of their property. And can you write about this?
Yeah, and you know, That gives me encouragement in some way, because I have talked to a lot of people about this, a lot of property owners, and they say, yeah, it's a good idea, but I'm just worried about getting sued. And, you know, I don't have a legal background. When I wrote this book, I interviewed countless law scholars just to help me get things squared away, get my facts straight. And what I learned is that, well, first of all, we do have something called recreational use statutes in all states, which to a fair degree cover these cases already. So some of these thoughts about, oh, you know, I'm going to get sued when someone trips and stubs their toe or whatever, they're slightly misconceptions, because a lot of these recreational use statutes, they say, you know, you can't get sued unless you, the landowner, has willfully and maliciously created or concealed a hazard. And what we're talking about, like, there's like a spiked pit or something like that. So, but going back to the right to roam, I mean, we're talking about like a hypothetical law. So, you know, in talking about this hypothetical law, we can imagine a hypothetical clause. And this clause can say, you can't get sued as landowner unless you've dug a spiked pit or something like that. And we see this in the English and Welsh law. In 2000, they passed the Countryside and Rights of Way Act, and they made very clear in that law that landowners can't get sued if you, say, cut yourself on some fencing or if you trip over a boulder or anything like that. So So yeah, we can attend to these issues, absolutely.
You also write about a group of kindergartners on a tour of an Iowa dairy farm, as you talk in your book about being about suing over trespassing. What happened there?
So there was a kindergarten class, and whoever was kind of the parent or the teacher, they were kind of leading this kindergarten class around, and the landowner said, "Oh, why don't you go up to this loft in the barn?" And this parent or this teacher, she was kind of heavy, and she fell through the loft, and she broke a few bones, and then she sued the landowners. And the landowners were, in this case, liable because there was kind of a loophole in the law that said, you know, as landowning supervisors, if you direct someone to go somewhere, you're liable in this case. And, you know, you might be able to say that's actually a reasonable case. But Iowa legislators, they said, you know what, this is making too many landowners nervous. We're going to get rid of this loophole. So they fixed the law, and Iowa has a really good recreational use statute that makes it very, very difficult to sue a landowner. And I think that's absolutely reasonable. Like, I think if you're a landowner and you're welcoming people to your property, you deserve the strongest possible protections. You should not be nervous at all about someone getting hurt and then you getting sued.
Let's bring in a call now. Let's go to Mark joining us from Franklin. Hi, Mark.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I think your guest ought to move to Wisconsin. We have hiking trails all over the state. The Ice Age Trail runs over 1,000 miles only in Wisconsin, from the northwest to the central south to the tip of Door County. Milwaukee County alone has over 100 miles of Oak Leaf Trail, not counting the other trails that are in the state. There are hiking trails all over. We also have access to any navigable water, and this goes back to French-English treaties for this area. So if you can get to a water from public land, you can walk as far as you want in that water, as long as you keep at least 1 foot in the water. It's a great thing. The only thing that I'm concerned about is I enjoy going out and constantly picking up garbage on the trails because people, and if you start to open too much up, I'm afraid it's going to be all destroyed. And how do you handle that? You're out in the wilderness and you've got somebody up ahead that changes their baby's diaper and leaves it laying on the side of the trail, or just drops their plastic and glass.
Who don't have the same level of responsibility about that natural environment. Let's get Ken to respond. Ken, go ahead.
Great thoughts, first of all. The topic of litter, yeah, I researched that because the country of Sweden dealt with this. Because once Swedish people started driving cars, and once plastic was available, you know, like candy wrappings and sandwich wrappings and whatnot, they experienced what the rest of the world who had these developments were experiencing, that was increased litter. And they've created, you know, litter task forces. They go into schools and educate young people at a very young age. I mean, they're going in there in kindergarten, and they create like these mythical wooden trolls to kind of say, you know, litter is bad. And then they do kind of like these nationwide litter drives where, amazingly, they get 9% of the population to get out on their feet and pick up litter. And when you're picking up litter, it changes your behavior. You're not going to be like, well, I'm going to start littering now. We see this in Texas as well. Texas created a magnificent anti-littering campaign called Don't Mess with Texas, and they really reduced the litter we see on roadsides. Do I think, you know, we can get rid of litter entirely? No. Like, I do think litter is probably always going to be a problem. But do I think we can fix it? We can make it better? Absolutely. You know, in North Carolina, I didn't own the land, but I kind of co-managed the land. We had about 5 acres, me and my friend, in the woods. And, you know, I'd have to pick up beer cans and sandwich wrappers and stuff like that a couple times a year. Was it a huge burden? No. You know, it was just something I dealt with as a sort of landowner. As for the hiking trails and navigable water, you know, I think it's absolutely fantastic that a state like Wisconsin has that. And I looked at, just before this conversation, I looked at 1995 numbers of public land, and it said maybe things have changed, but Wisconsin had 15% public land, 85% private land in 1995. You know, that's pretty good for American standards, 15%. Some states like Nebraska, Kansas, Texas, Ohio, they have less than 3% public land. So maybe something like this would make more sense in states like that. But still, 85% private land and therefore mostly off limits, that's still probably pretty tough. And as for people living next to like the Ice Age Trail or the Pacific Crest Trail or Appalachian Trail, you know, great for them. You know, that's amazing access to nature. However, you know, a lot of people don't have these nice trails within a short drive or within a short walk from their front doors. So I would only say that it may take care of some people, but not everybody.
We're taking a closer look at land ethic, that a case can be made for land being for all humankind. The book is This Land is Our Land. Ken Ilgunas is with us, gathering your insights along the way. Are public lands in jeopardy in some way? How do you approach public versus private land? Questions we're asking, you can join the conversation, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Now let's turn over to Pledge Central and get a check on the spring membership drive.
Thanks so much, Kate. I'm Cheryl Gasser. Good morning, along in the studio with Keely Bultina, and we are here during the Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Membership Drive. It finally feels like spring out, and it's your gift that makes a huge difference, because listeners are the single largest source of funding for WPR programs. So we're asking you now to step up and be counted as a supporter with your gift right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We are looking for 17 more pledges in the next 20 minutes. It sounds like a lot, but it's totally doable, and you are one of those. Your gift right now is so important, because when you give, you support the programs that you rely on every day.
If you've already given, thank you so much. We've heard from Ben in Appleton and Dan in Ashland and Susan in Menominee Falls. Won't you join them? How about you? The time is now. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You make hours like this possible, where we're able to talk about the struggle between public and private lands, or help us question the way we've always done things, or maybe find support for our worldview. WPR is listener supported, so when you give at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552, you make this hour possible. Choose any amount that works for you, take a few minutes, and make your pledge.
We have a beautiful new artist mug for you this year, if you're collecting them or maybe just beginning. It's an image of a caribou created in beadwork made by Karen Ann Hoffman of the Oneida Nation. We think you'll love drinking your coffee or tea from this mug, and it's yours for a pledge of $15 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
At 6 o'clock, as soon as my husband gets out of bed, I turn on the radio in the room, and it's on the whole day. I decided to become a sustaining member because it's so convenient. I've been a contributor to public radio probably for close to 20 years. It's just a very convenient way for the money to come out of your checking account on a monthly basis. My name is Nancy, and I'm from Sheldon, Wisconsin, and I enjoy being a WPR sustainer, and I think you will too.
Pledge at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. I'm Keely Bultina, here with Cheryl Gasser, and once in a while, you actually get more than you pay for. WPR is one place where that's true every day. Listener support is the single biggest source of funding for the programs you rely on, and that's why your support during this spring membership drive is so important. Maybe your gift is $10 a month or $100 a month. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount.
We are looking for 20 pledges this this hour. And the number that matters most is one. It's you. We're asking you to make your pledge now. Go to the phone or pledge online. You make WPR possible when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And consider becoming a sustainer. If you're not a sustainer right now, become one today. It's easy to set up. It's convenient with ongoing monthly payments from your bank account or credit card. You can do that at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Your gift is powerful and really makes a difference. Please contribute now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you.
This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to New York Island.
In 1940, folk singer Woody Guthrie traveled by bus and he hitchhiked, made it his way from Texas to New York City, where he wrote the lyrics to This Land Is Your Land. And that song comes up as part of the narrative in the final part of Ken Ilgunis' new book, This Land Is Our Land. We're talking about the tensions that exist and the case that is made to evolve our views on private property. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You can join in the discussion at 800-642-1234. Do people have the right to ramble? Where does the law, right-of-way, eminent domain, all of that factor into this conversation for you? Bring your perspective. Call in. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Joanne in Reedsburg has been waiting a while. Joanne, hi. Go ahead.
Hello. Thank you so much for taking my call. This is a great topic, and I'm so grateful that it's being discussed. After I have a family living in England and have had the opportunity to roam the English countryside, and I was astonished when we walked through private property. We passed through gates where animals were being pastured, and we were responsible for opening the gate and closing the gate. I saw no litter, and it really opened my eyes to how things could be. We could think about things very differently. I live in a rural community and have easy access to the woods. I almost always have, but those who live in urban areas don't, and would find it very hard to, in some cases, find their way to this kind of experience. And it's expensive to these days to get into a state park in many cases. So it feels right that we should all have access to wild places, and not just those that are within the confines of a state or national park. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Joanne, thank you so much for bringing your story to the conversation and those perspectives. Ken, let's start with the European part of that, of what Joanne was saying there. What can we learn from other countries and how they handle this?
Yeah, so let's divide European countries into two categories. For some countries, it's kind of a partial right to roam system, and for others, it's a full right to roam system. Let's talk about the partial. Countries like Iceland, England, Wales, Germany, Switzerland, Austria, they have partial right to roam systems, which means you don't have access to everywhere, but you do have access to some places. In 2000, England and Wales passed the Countryside and Rights of Way Act, and that opened up mountains, moors, heaths, and downs. And moors, heaths, and downs, those are just kind of fancy English words for unimproved grasslands. In 2009, they also opened up the coasts. So in a place like England, you don't have access to everywhere. This law opened up about 8 to 12% of the property, and yeah, a lot of that goes over kind of sheep pasture and whatnot. Now, when you look at a country like Sweden, where they have something called allemansrätten, which means every man's right, every man's or every person's right to nature, and in Scotland they have something known as the right to roam or the right of responsible access, and this is more or less a full right to roam system. You can have access to virtually the whole countryside for reasons of of recreation, of transportation, and education, which means you can paddle a canoe, you can go birding, you can hike the highlands, you can camp. Now there's lots of rules. You know, this may sound like a free-for-all, but there's so many rules. Mm. For one, you can't go up to someone's home. You know, you don't have the right to roam in someone's home. You don't have the right to roam in someone's yard. Everyone deserves a sphere of privacy, and this typically means about 75 yards from any home. So it's not really going to apply to suburbia. You're not going to have someone going through these adjacent backyards. You can't walk over vulnerable crops. You can't let your dog off the leash around sheep and livestock. So it's a very well-regulated system. You can't go with motorized vehicles, and on and on.
Well, Joanne also brings up the cost of roaming, that state parks are expensive to get into. There are some lottery systems out there to even get a spot in a park, in a national forest. So how do you address that, the cost of roaming?
It's very expensive. And you know what? It's maybe a slight exaggeration, but it is sort of a luxury of the privileged. Because, I mean, you know, I grew up in Buffalo, New York. I don't even know where the nearest trail is. You know, I grew up here. I don't know where the nearest trail is. There's just not many. So me and my buddy, we took off on a road trip out west because we wanted to have kind of a wilder experience. And driving out to Yellowstone or Yosemite or some of these big parks out west, it's extraordinarily expensive, first of all, for the drive, second of all, to get in. The Trump administration recently proposed raising entrance fees to about 17 national parks to $70 per car. Luckily, that didn't happen, but it's still $35 per car. That's expensive for, you know, anyone who's not firmly in the middle class. So I think a right to roam, it would give ordinary people better access, more affordable access. It won't break the bank. And honestly, I think it would alleviate some of the visitation pressures on some of these national parks. When you go to a place like Yosemite in California, you might end up in traffic that's as bad as or worse than the cities. I mean, you could be in line in your car for hours. And I think that's because people are forced to hold their adventures, to have their natural experiences in places that are now crowded because they don't have access to these places around their homes and neighborhoods.
Let's bring in Anne from Green Bay. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning. Well, I applaud what you're doing, but I don't think the people in this country really...
Oh, and we just dropped Anne, and I think Anne was circling back to it starts with government in order to make some of these changes happen. Switching gears here a moment, Ken, here in Wisconsin, there's been a controversy over a proposed 18-hole luxury golf course near Lake Michigan, the controversy stemming from the fact that the DNR will have to give up part of a state park in order for the course to be built. Is this something you're seeing out there, a conflict between developers and those who rely on public land?
Yeah, I mean, when public land turns private, that means the private landowner, the private corporation, has the right to exclude everyone from that land. And, you know, we kind of saw this with the radical ranchers of the Sagebrush Rebellion when they wanted to take over the Oregon Malheur National Wildlife Refuge, which is kind of a bird refuge in Oregon. And essentially what these radical ranchers want to do is to take public land and turn it private. And they say they're doing this in the name of the American people, but what happens when this actually works is public land gets sold to the highest bidder, and it's almost always someone who has a great deal of wealth, and then they promptly put up their no trespassing signs and exclude. So this whole movement to get rid of our public lands, I find it to be very sad and tragic, and we already don't have a lot of roaming space. This would limit it even more.
Let's squeeze in one more call here. I know we're short on time. Let's go to Chris, who's been waiting in Milwaukee. Hi, Chris.
Hello. I think that we have to start with the children. My husband was on the first three-man board that created the Ice Age Trail, and he said young people have to be taught to respect the land. And if we started in the schools, as in when I was teaching at the university in the Downer Woods, I took an art class there. And when we got to the woods, I said, give me the drawing boards. I'll meet you down in the middle of the woods where there's a log and a little stream. These were inner city kids that were pretty hyped up. And 10 minutes later, when I met them, these very active, noisy young people were all sitting quietly in awe and saying, I've never been in a place where I could never see out. We have to teach our young people. We have to have our schools buy more woods and take our young people out into nature so that they have a connection, because once the land is gone, it's gone. And we have land in the Conservancy, and we would love to have people be on it. But you hate to find trash all over.
Chris, I'm going to have to stop there. But Ken, this is what Chris is saying for the next generation, for the future.
Yes, and the benefits of nature, they're hard to count. We have major health and physical inactivity problems. You know, 41% of us classify as sedentary. 71% of us classify as overweight. I think we have mental health problems that nature has proven to fix. I think we have social capital problems, which nature has proven to fix. When you look at these studies done in books like Richard Liu's Last Child in the Woods, or Vitamin N, or Florence Williams' The Nature Fix, you learn all sorts of things about the benefits of nature, from fixing ADHD levels, to helping with memory, to helping with creativity, to helping with health, with prolonging life. If we all had more nature in our lives, yes, I think we'd be a better people, a better country.
Well, Ken, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Ken Ilgunas is an author, journalist, and backcountry ranger in Alaska. Among other things, he's walked thousands of miles across North America. His new book is This Land is Our Land, How We Lost the Right to Roam and How to Take It Back. This Hour of the Morning Show was produced by Chris Molina and Jane Rotunda. Michael Derringer provided technical direction. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and now let's turn our attention to an update on the spring membership drive.
Kate, thanks. I'm Keely Boltina here with Cheryl Gasser, and we're reminding you that your gift right now is so important. That's because gifts from people like you are the single largest source of funding for Wisconsin Public Radio programs. Your gift keeps these programs, all the programs you enjoy, going strong.
So invest in your future listening. Do it now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. The fact of the matter is, we could not do this without you. So please make your donation now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, we've heard about what should be public land and what should be private property. And hours like this let you think. They make you think. Wisconsin Public Radio is listener supported. That means when you give, you make this hour and many more hours possible. So go to WPR.org, call 888-202-2552, and choose an amount that works for you. Take a few minutes, make your pledge.
And you can also enjoy our 2018 Artist Mug. It's a beautiful image of a caribou made by Karen Ann Hoffman. The work is inspired by rock art that she actually found in southwestern Wisconsin. It's a great story. You can ask for your mug now and show your support for WPR every time you take a sip of your morning coffee or tea or whatever it is you enjoy. You can see the mug online when you make your pledge at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
We tune in to Wisconsin Public Radio for the shows we all know and love, and a lot goes into making a show.
My name is Joe Hartke, and I'm a technical director. A technical director is there to make sure a broadcast sounds nice, stimulating, and engaging. I know our listeners are incredibly smart when it comes to sound, so much so that when I've put the wrong bird in a piece, they will point out to me that that particular bird is native to Dublin, Ireland, and would not be heard in New Berlin, Wisconsin. Every piece I do, I feel like I could keep on tweaking for another week on something, but we have deadlines, so I have to stop.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a high-quality experience every time you tune in. And when you give, you're a big part of what makes it all happen. Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Your gift is such an important part of making the programs you enjoy possible.
And if you are a sustainer, make today the day you increase your monthly donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. If you've pledged already, thank you so much. If not, let's hear from you now. WPR.org.